You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Just ahead, we'll be discussing the American Rescue Plan Act, President Biden's $1.9 trillion stimulus package signed into law yesterday. Let's gather your thoughts on it this hour, 800-642-1234. But first, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a new book out of La Crosse.
The story of Sai and Sia is a Hmong folktale of a young woman's journey to the netherworld to save her husband and bring him back to life. Wisconsin author Bo Shong expands on this traditional tale in her new book, Folklore, where she imagines the story behind Sia's courage. Hope Kerwin sat down with Shong in La Crosse to hear her take on the folktale and the power of belief.
Thousands of years ago, when the stars were young, in the times of gods and demons, old magic and ghostly encounters, the spirits were envious of humans, and fate had often tested lovers. All the odds were against Sai and Sia, two lovers compelled to go on a very miraculous journey. Hi, I'm Bo Shong. I'm local here to La Crosse. I am the founder of Moth House Press. I first heard the story of Sai and Sia probably when I was in grade school. Every night my mom would tell us stories. I mean, we would always go to sleep with some kind of tall tale. Essentially, Hmong folklore is orally told stories. Not a lot of it has been recorded or published. So it makes it very unique, and every time somebody tells the story, it's a little bit different. So the second time when I heard the story of Sai and Sia again, it was about 2 years ago, and mom and I, we were driving at 6 a.m. to Farmer's Market, and I was like, hey, mom, you know, the hero of the story is actually the wife. And my mother disagrees with me, and she says, no, I think it's the husband because, you know, he has supernatural powers and she wouldn't survive without him. But I was like, but the story, the wife saves him, and she goes on more than one journey to do that. And I was like, that makes her the hero of the story. As a young girl growing up, I didn't realize, you know, that we had any stories based on strong female characters. This story definitely has one. And for years, I never thought of it that way because of the way it was told. Whenever they talk about Sia, they cut her actions or her events short. So I created a hero's journey for her for the second portion of the story. There's a lot of very, like, bizarre supernatural events that happen in the original oral story. So I just wanted to make sense of it all for the readers. Nobody really knows about our culture and our beliefs, so why are all these things happening? So I just wanted to establish in chapter one with this conversation between the two of them. We're close to the village. The locals say the woods are home to the spirits, said Sai. Folklore around here is full of cautionary tales. The people believe in them, so we keep out of the woods. You don't believe in them? Asked Sia. They could just be stories, said Sai. He glanced over his shoulder to check on his parents in the carriage behind them. Her husband doesn't want to give in to the superstitions because he believes that if you believe in them, they become real. I think that's a big part of it, like belief does make things real. I wrote this book with an intention just to help record and preserve some of these stories that I feel like would be lost with the older generations. I would say that not a lot of people, Hmong Americans today, who are the younger generation, speak Hmong. And that's very hard to believe, but not a lot of them do. But I also want new readers who are just interested in dark fantasies and dark romances and superstition and lore to also discover new stories. I don't understand how an old ghost story can keep elders and villagers out of an entire forest, says I. Surely the spirits of the dead cannot wield such power over the living. You may be right, but some of the stories are true, said Sia. Sai turned back to his wife. Did you hear this from someone you know? Yes, replied Sia, someone I knew.
WPR's Hope Kerwin brought us that story on Bo Shong, a La Crosse author with a new book, Folklore. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And now we're discussing the $1.9 trillion stimulus package. The Center for American Progress says it meets the historic challenge our country faces. The Heritage Foundation calls it deeply flawed and stuffed with provisions that have nothing to do with COVID or economic hardship. How do you feel about the rescue plan that is now law? Is it too much or too little to stimulate our economy? And what about the third round of stimulus checks to most Americans? It's 800-642-1234. Anita Kumar is White House correspondent and associate editor at Politico. Anita, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, let's start with the $1,400 stimulus checks. How does the government decide who receives them and what income they're based on? Who qualifies?
Well, thanks for having me again. It's the question everybody is asking. The checks were, there was a little bit of a debate here because Republicans didn't want it to go to everyone. They wanted to really limit it to those that were, you know, out of work or had their wages reduced or were making less money. And Democrats really wanted it to go to everyone. So we are seeing the $1,400. That includes $1,400 for each child. It goes to individuals making $75,000 or less, or couples earning, you know, up to $150,000. So it is limited. Republicans wanted to limit it more, though. They say it's a waste of money to send to people that don't need it.
And it's calculated on your income taxes from, is it last year then?
Yeah, that's right. And so the IRS is going to be administering them. So the White House is saying that people could see the checks, or see the money rather, already in their bank accounts this weekend. So that's if you file electronically and the IRS is already sending you money electronically from previous years. Otherwise, they kind of have to track you down and you would actually get a check in the mail. So not everybody would get it this weekend, but this is very quick for people to start seeing it in their banks this weekend.
Anita, what are economists thinking about this particular way to stimulate the economy, sending checks to Americans?
Well, there is thought that, you know, this is the way to go because it puts immediate money into the economy. It really depends on sort of what people spend it on, right? This is going to go to people that make a little bit less money. And so they say those are the people that are likely to spend it right away on things they need, as opposed to putting it away and not spending it. And so, right, they want people to spend money to stimulate the economy. And so I think that everybody, both sides, or everybody that disagrees about who should get it, believe that putting money into the economy this way is a good idea. Again, the big debate was who gets it and should it go to everyone?
Let's look at the unemployment benefits, now extended to September 6th with the amount of $300 a week. The House originally wanted benefits to be $400 a week until the end of August. Why were changes made before the Senate vote?
Yeah, if you remember, this was the big, huge 12-hour holdup when the Senate was voting. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, who's a Democrat, but a moderate Democrat, really said, I don't know if I want to go for $400 a week. It's too much. I think we need to cut that back. And so there were competing proposals. There was a Republican proposal and a Democratic proposal. Both of them lowered the amount of money per week. The Republican proposal would have stopped it earlier in the year. And that was the great debate on what to do because, of course, the Senate is split 50-50. Really, one person really matters here. Mm-hmm. In the end, Joe Manchin went with what the Democrats came up with, this compromise that it would extend it longer, so into September, but lower the amount. And, you know, when you ask the White House or House Democrats, how do you feel about that? They say, well, look, it's a longer period of time, so we're fine with that. It was considered a compromise, but again, Republicans overall were not supportive of it.
You know, rollout, you know, saying, you know, it's in the package is one thing, it's law, but the rollout, will there be a gap in the payment of these unemployment benefits in Wisconsin and other states? What is the timeline?
Yeah, we don't really know the timeline, and that's because this is a massive, massive bill. And it's going to take a lot of work on unemployment benefits and also some of these other things to sort of walk through how they're going to get to people, what it means It's not as simple as just passing the bill, signing it into law, and something coming out. Now, the checks, as I mentioned, would be very quick, or the money, rather, would be very quick. But some of these other things, what we're hearing from the administration is it could take weeks or even months for people to feel this because it is so large and because so much needs to be done. If you'll recall, last year, we had the same issue with some of these other bills, and this is much larger than those bills. What the White House is saying, though, is that they're going to hire or designate, rather, someone to be in charge of implementing this and making sure things run smoothly. They have not named who that person is yet, though.
We're talking with Politico's White House correspondent Anita Kumar, who is walking us through the ins and outs of the American Rescue Plan, answering your questions about the aid package that is now law. The plan increases the child tax credit for this year and boosts unemployment, as we've been talking about. What do you think of these measures and targeting support for low and middle income earners? How will the plan change your day-to-day living situation or your quality of life? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Anita Kumar here on the Ideas Network. We're spending the hour on the American Rescue Plan Act, what the $1.9 trillion stimulus relief package has in it. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Urban Institute says it will help families pay their bills and reduce child poverty by more than half. What do you want to know about the bill's effect on the child tax credit? Will this bring more stability to your finances? What about student loans or housing? Are those provisions key to you? Share your reaction to the aid package and what's in it. 800-642-1234. Anita Kumar is associate editor at Politico. She's our guide. Let's bring in Matt now in Nisida. Hi, Matt. What is your reaction to the plan?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question for the guest is, does anyone know what percentage what percentage of the plan is going to direct payments? What percentage of the plan is going to related economic stimulus? And what percentage of the plan is strictly Biden administration agenda items?
Matt, thank you. Do you have a bit of that breakdown, Anita?
I don't have those percentages, unfortunately, in front of me. I will say, though, the caller hit on something that's been a great debate here, which is, Republicans who voted against it were saying, look, a lot of this isn't about the coronavirus. You know, yes, there is tons in here that relates to that. Obviously, we can talk about that vaccine and testing and that sort of thing. But a lot of it is sort of Democratic wish lists is what they are saying. And it's things that, that don't directly relate to coronavirus, but are just to sort of put in there things that Democrats have been wanting for a long time. So that is one of the issues and one of the great debates, but I just don't have those numbers in front of me.
One of the other sticking points, too, is deficits. Deficits have ballooned since the start of the pandemic. The Treasury Department said this week the U.S. ran a $1 trillion deficit from October through February. What are lawmakers saying there? Should we be concerned about the widening budget gap?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of concern with this bill on the future. What this does more than any bill they're talking about that is like this in the past is that it really stresses this coming year, 1 year period. And it doesn't really look at what's happening in the future. So you're right. People are talking about spending and deficits. They're also talking about what's going to happen in a year or so, when this falls off, meaning, we've done all these things, we've made all these changes. Is Congress then going to extend those? They don't want to be on the hook, or some of them don't want to be on the hook for that. Or is it just going to fall off? Are people going to get used to having some of this money or these credits and then not have them in a year? What's going to happen? So there wasn't a lot of talk as much what will happen in the future. But you're exactly right. Republicans have said, look, we're not looking at the future in terms of spending and deficits, and we need to be doing that. This bill was entirely too large for them. They were proposing something that was about a third of this.
Let's take a look at the child tax credit, because there's been an eye on poverty and lifting children and families out of poverty through this bill. Can you explain for us how the expanded child tax credit will work?
Yeah, parents would receive $3,000 a year for every child aged 6 to 17 and $3,600 a year for every child under 6. So to compare to what that is now, the current credit is $2,000. That is, you know, a considerable difference there. The poorest families can get a refund from the government for only $1,400. So it's a significant boost. And again, this is one of those key pieces. Will it continue in the future, or are they just going to do that for right now?
Yeah, and so this is one time, to 2021. And again, I would assume that this is based on tax information.
Right. That's based on tax information. And of course, that would be for the taxes you're going to do that you probably haven't done yet. And you know, again, that should be a significant boost. That is one of the key provisions you talked about, pulling people out of poverty. This is one of the key indicators that they're looking at in the bill for that.
Do parents have to be employed to receive this tax credit?
Oh, that's a really good question. I do not think they have to be employed for that. I'm not positive. Mm-hmm. I think it, of course, depends on, you know, things will have changed, right? So they could be unemployed now, but they're looking at what your taxes were previously to judge on this. So it wouldn't make sense that it would be based on what it is right now.
Yeah, because what I had gathered, that the credit is fully refundable. And so parents with little or no income would get the full credit, which I thought, you know, kind of really impacts the poverty situation for children, you know, in a positive way.
Right. That's, I mean, this is one of the three credits that they're looking at. And this is one of those key ones that you're talking about. And I think that's really the thing that Democrats are looking at when they tout this bill, is that poverty level. They're, you know, they have been talking about that, well, since before Joe Biden became president, but how people shouldn't be in this pandemic, but even before the pandemic, there should not be this much poverty in the United States. And this is a key way to get a number of people out. Again, the future question is, will this remain that way?
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Anita Kumar, an associate editor at Politico, as we take a look at the rescue package and what it means for families, what it means for businesses, and what it means for ending the pandemic. You can join in. How do you feel about the new stimulus package now law? Will this sufficiently help the economy? And what will it do for your family, your livelihood? 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Gary now in Iron River with a question. Gary, hi, what's on your mind?
Good morning. Say, I wonder if the reporter from Politico there could comment on this agricultural loan forgiveness program. What I hear reported is you can have 120% of your loan forgiven. That means the full loan plus get 20% sent to you if you're a black farmer, an Asian farmer, or a Hispanic farmer, and there's no income check, so no matter how rich you are, you get that. But there's nothing similar in it if you're a white farmer, poor, rich, or otherwise.
Gary, thanks. And do we have any insights there, Anita?
I do not. I don't know about that. That's an interesting comment that he made, but I'm not familiar with that.
Let's look now at vaccines and what this will mean in this bill as we look at the response to COVID and what it means for testing, vaccine distribution. What do you see on this front?
Yeah, as you know, President Biden, and of course he talked about this last night, he's really wanting to move those dates up and would like to have vaccines available by May 1st and people to really get that vaccine and get back to normal by July 4th. So he has $16 billion for vaccine distribution in the bill. He also has $50 billion for contact tracing. You know, one of the things that sort of gets lost here is that people are so focused on the vaccine, which I think we all should be. But, you know, remember last year and even early this year, what there was so much attention paid to tests and contact tracing. And we sort of have stopped talking about that because we're talking about the vaccine. This sort of looks at both of those things. He wants people to continue to get test, people to contact trace so we can find out who might be spreading and where that's going, but also the vaccine distribution. Some of the states have said is great, you're producing enough, but get it to me, get it over to those states and help me find places to vaccinate people. So this gets it to all of those things. It should help with getting people to do the vaccinations, getting places that they can be vaccinated, different community centers and other areas. All of that is in here.
We have Politico's Anita Kumar unpacking how the newly signed relief package will affect families, businesses, communities. How do you see this law impacting pandemic recovery, the economy, racial disparities, national security, healthcare? Is it too much aid or the right amount at the right time? Are you worried about the federal deficit down the road? Be part of this 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update here on the Ideas Network. The giant aid package known as the American Rescue Plan has been signed into law. We're digging into it here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The $1.9 trillion relief allocates money for COVID vaccines, as we've been discussing, schools, small businesses, programs to lift children and families out of poverty. Of Wisconsin's congressional delegation, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson cast a no vote along with every other Republican in Congress and has been one of the most vocal critics. U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin said this week it will be especially helpful to small businesses. Will your business get a boost? And what is most urgent? Will this aid help you stay afloat or is it too late? 800-642-1234. Anita Kumar is White House correspondent and associate editor at Politico. She's with us for the hour. Jason is with us from Barron with thoughts on this plan. Jason, hi, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment on there's likely a lot of people that are being missed in the stimulus. When I look at my wife and I, we make more money, and if anything, she makes a little more than me. And I think last time I got like $11 out of this stimulus, but we don't have much in the bank. We have about $300,000 in student loans. We might have $1,000 in our bank account together, but we live menial. We got the $200 car payment on one car. I drive a different used car and $500 mortgage. But none of this will help us, even though we are over the threshold to receive any stimulus, we're not doing well. And it seems like Biden just probably did a bait and switch with, trying to extend any assistance for student loans. And I know I'm not the only colleague who's in this position. I am in healthcare. I have been working nonstop for the past year, right alongside, COVID patients in the CCU. And it's kind of frustrating knowing that I'm not the only nurse. She herself is a doctor of physical therapy, of which you want to be a physical therapist, you need to get your doctorate. You're talking six figures of education with no extra compensation when you get into the healthcare system for the extra education.
Jason, thank you so much for sharing your story. We appreciate it. Anita, have you heard this sentiment that there are gaps here, that there are people who are hurting but are not getting the aid?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really, really interesting point, particularly about those in the healthcare field, right, who are helping, the whole country at this point. I guess what Democrats would argue and what I've heard them argue is, people like this caller who may not get a lot or anything in these checks, although they would get something for their children. All children are getting something, or parents are getting for children, are going to feel something later on in their taxes, right? So not everything is going to be today or this weekend in their bank account, but later down the road, they could be feeling some of that and could be getting some of that. But, the caller is right. I mean, there are a lot of people in this country that you know, maybe on the surface get the threshold, you know, what they get in their income is going to not trigger anything immediately. But I guess what I would say is that the argument is that later on in their taxes, they could feel something.
So it might be down the line, there may be some impact that they'll feel later on, but not with the immediacy of the stimulus checks that will be provided to so many Americans. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Let's take a look for a moment at what occurred in the debate over the minimum wage. Progressives had hoped to gradually increase the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. What happened there?
Yeah, so they removed the provision from this bill. And what we're hearing is that there's going to be probably a separate bill to do that. So it's a really complicated situation that happened. But essentially what happened is the House voted for this $15 an hour increase over several years. The Senate was going to vote on that, but the Senate parliamentarian said it should not be in the bill. And here's why. This bill is under sort of a budget maneuver called reconciliation. And not to get too much in the weeds here, it just basically means that this bill needs to have something to do with the budget. This was the parliamentarian said, look, the minimum wage is not directly on that topic, and it needs to be pulled out. There are senators, Democratic senators, who wanted to move ahead with this anyway and just say, hey, let's not care what the parliamentarian said. But that's just not the way they went. So it was pulled out. You know, here's the thing. If that had stayed in there, it would have likely caused a problem and perhaps the bill couldn't pass. That's because Senator Joe Manchin, who I mentioned earlier from West Virginia, another senator from Arizona, both Democrats had said, look, we just don't know if we can vote for $15 an hour so quickly. That's over a few years, it's a big increase, and they thought it would hurt some businesses, like small businesses that couldn't afford this increase. So in the end, it was probably a blessing to Democrats that wanted to push this through, because it probably would not have passed with this.
As a standalone bill, is there traction for this?
No, yes. not at that number and not at that pace, because remember, as I just mentioned, these two moderate Democrats have already said they don't support it. And again, going back to that really split Senate, 50-50, with the Democrats holding the majority because of the vice president. So 50-50, they would need, as a standalone bill, they'd need 10 Republicans to support. And of course, these are, arcane Senate rules that say they need basically 60 votes, not 51 votes, for most bills to pass. So what we're hearing is that the White House, which very much supports $15 an hour, is going to sit down with Republicans at some point, or talking about doing that, to say, where can we go from here? What can we pass? So there are some senators saying, look, let's maybe do $11 and not $15. But we just don't know where that will be. And you have people like Senator Bernie Sanders, who's obviously very progressive, saying, no, we need $15 an hour. So there's really got to be a point where they sit down and talk about what they can get through.
Let's look more closely then at what small businesses are facing as we talk there about minimum wage. And this puts more funds into the Paycheck Protection Program. What does this change for the PPP and the impact on businesses?
Yeah, that was one of the things that people that I think Republicans and Democrats both liked from previous bills. They didn't want to, in this bill, really help the big companies. This was geared towards individuals and small businesses. This bill provides $15 billion to the Emergency Injury Disaster Loan Program, which provides long-term low-interest loans from the Small Business Administration. It will deal with businesses fewer than 10 workers. It also has $25 billion for a new grant program specifically for bars and restaurants. As you know, they have been hurting because many have been closed or people aren't coming out to eat.
Big time.
Yeah, and particularly in some states where it's so cold, you know, it's hard to go out to eat. So in Florida, I know that there are a lot of restaurants open and people can sit outside. But in other places, Washington included, it's pretty cold. I'm sure it's very cold there.
We have no idea what you mean, Anita. No idea.
No, people should not compare Wisconsin to Washington. I know there's such a big difference. But even here, people are reluctant to eat out. So I'm sure there, too. Eligible businesses for this grant program could use the money for a variety of expenses, mortgage, rent, payroll, utilities, food and beverages. And then you mentioned the PPP, that Paycheck Protection Program, which is currently still taking applications for the second round of loans. It would get an additional $7 billion, I think, as you mentioned. And then there's, you know, so there's a variety of things that they wanted to do to really try to boost small businesses. And they're hopeful that that can kind of take them to, you know, for the next few months, and then they can start to open and really people can start to get back out and go out and spend money.
We're talking with Anita Kumar, who is White House correspondent, associate editor at Politico, as we look at the package passed, signed into law yesterday, and what this relief will do for families, for businesses. With your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Tom is here from Burlington. Hi, Tom. What are your thoughts on the plan?
Well, I would like to see them fix the water pipe system in America, first of all. But when I studied economics, one of the problems with the Depression of 1929 was the Republicans wanted to balance the budget, and they got us into a trade war. And it was only after the Second World War, when the Second World War came, that we went all that massive spending. That's how we got out of it. And I can't believe that these Republicans have gone 100% against doing anything. It's just absolutely astounding. And I just wonder if Trump really has all that control of it.
All right, Tom, thank you. So, Tom, looking at a historical lens there and also really wanting to see the infrastructure piece worked on as we put money into the economy to recharge.
Yeah, I mean, the infrastructure, from what I'm gathering, is really the next step. That is something that the White House is looking at as, you know, the White House has kind of talked about coronavirus in two steps, the pandemic and, of course, the testing and the vaccines and all that sort of stuff, and then the economy. And so that is going to be the next step for the White House and for some Democrats, that they want to have another package for infrastructure. And that is, as he's talking about, water, it's roads, it's bridges, it's broadband, it's all of that. And that, you know, President Biden, when he was on the campaign trail, talked about a $2 trillion package. I have heard, you know, in the last 6 weeks, Democrats talking about $3 trillion and $4 trillion. I don't know that that is going to go over well with Republicans or these moderate Democrats, but I think that is really the next step, both to repair things that need to be repaired in this country that have been lagging for quite some time, but also what the caller just mentioned, to get people back to work and put that money into the economy. I think that we're going to see that next.
We're talking with Politico's White House correspondent Anita Kumar, walking us through the American Rescue Plan, answering your questions about the aid package that is now law, signed by President Biden yesterday. We'll pick this up in just a moment. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about President Biden's giant coronavirus relief package signed into law yesterday. It means aggressive federal aid to counteract the toll this pandemic has brought. And there's still time for your reaction to the package, what you think it'll mean for your family, your livelihood. Anita Kumar of Politico stays with us for 10 more minutes. Jill is joining us from Madison. Hi, Jill. What do you see in it?
Good morning. I think something is better than nothing, generally. But I was wondering if your guest knows if there's anything in this package in regards to student loans. I know that was one of the wish list things that was in the package, but was there anything implemented in this time? I can take my response off the air.
Jill, thank you. What does this bill mean for loan forgiveness for college students, financial aid, higher ed? What do you see there, Anita?
So there is money for education, but I'm not 100% positive. I think that the loan forgiveness that they talked about didn't actually get into this. I will tell you about the education piece. There's really two pieces of it. $40 billion is going to go to colleges. So that's directly to those colleges. That's not relating to those loans. At least half of that money must be spent on emergency financial aid grants to students. And then the rest is for lost revenue. There's also a piece, of course, this is not what the caller's talking about, that goes to K-12, which we haven't really talked about. And there's also a piece to child care providers. I don't really see anything about the loan forgiveness. And of course, that's something that they looked at last year as well.
Let's look at K-12 school aid, providing funding for districts to reopen safely. How will these funds be distributed?
Yeah, this was to me one of the big pieces, because that's the debate really going on right now in every state in America, is how to open these schools. And as you know, President Biden has sort of gone back and forth. He keeps saying that he wants the schools open, but the metrics of that have really shifted. And, you know, governors are finding that they can't order the schools to be opened. That really is a local district issue in conjunction with those labor unions. The bill provides $125 billion to these public K-12 schools to help them return to the classroom. So that could be used for ventilation systems, you know, reduce class sizes, you know, to help implement a social distancing, things like, maybe screens or, you know, dividers, things like that. Another $2.75 billion goes to private schools. So that's, you know, it's not just focused on the public schools. And then it requires some of the money to be spent on this thing that we keep hearing about, learning loss. Mm. And learning loss is that students in these last year just aren't, they're not getting that same education virtually. And so that is going to help them open, you know, another day of the week, maybe on a Saturday, or which I'm sure kids won't really want, or summer school, but something to help them boost them before the next school year.
Yeah. What about healthcare systems, specifically rural healthcare? This has put billions of dollars into needs there. What is the effort?
So there's a couple different things that sort of touch on that. I mean, we didn't really talk about it, but there's nutritional assistance. There's also a big amount of money to something that seems sort of not really that interesting, but was one of the biggest points of contention here, is that it provides money to local governments and state governments. That was one of the issues that divided Democrats and Republicans. Republicans didn't want that. Democrats did. And I bring that up because those governments can spend on a variety of different things, and including some of those programs. On other healthcare issues, the package will make federal premium subsidies for the Affordable Care Act policies more generous, and would eliminate the maximum income cap for 2 years. So it does try to bring those aspects into it. And it also seeks to entice states that have yet to expand Medicaid, which is something we've been hearing about for a while, to low-income adults to do so by boosting their federal Medicaid matching funds by 5%. Percentage points for the next 2 years.
Yeah, so a lot to look at there with the health insurance components. Annie is with us from Onalaska. Hi, Annie.
Hi. I just wanted to point out some additional things with the child tax credit. They have split the, from what I'm understanding, they're splitting that $3,000. Dollars per child, and it's being handled as like an advance that can be paid out in monthly payments starting as early as this summer, $250 per child, 6 to 17 years of age, or $300 per month for children 0 to 5, and that would get treated as like an advance on the $3,000.
So, and spreading out the credit.
Yeah. So monthly, starting as early as this summer. So it's being handled a little bit more as like a European style type child credit.
Annie, thank you for pointing that out. And Anita, are you seeing this in other areas, or in this area specifically, how distribution works on these types of programs like the child tax credit?
Yeah, I guess I would just go back to one of the biggest things that they looked at with this bill is how to get things to people almost immediately and how to do it within this 1 year. I can't stress enough that a lot of times when they pass big bills like this, and of course, this is a huge one, right? It hasn't been passed before, is that it's spread out over a period of time. This is not designed to do that in any way, shape, or form. It is designed to put money into the economy, into people, into small businesses in this first year as soon as possible to give this boost to the economy. And then to get things moving again so that we don't need some of those things down later. And so that was sort of a guiding principle of how to create this bill.
You know, the president, of course, on primetime television last night, taking stock of the huge loss, the huge toll of the pandemic. How do you think Americans feel about this relief package? What are you hearing?
Well, a couple things. When you look at some recent polls, there is support for this, or there is support for more to help the economy, more to help individual people. There's generally been support. I think the one thing that Democrats in Washington would also point out, and the White House points this out sort of every day, is that even though Republicans didn't support it in Congress, and let's be clear, none of them supported it, that you can talk to local and state leaders who are Republicans, governors, mayors, who say, we want this, we are supportive of this. And so they're calling this a bipartisan bill because there seems to be support from Americans and from Republicans and Democrats across the country. I think, of course, you know, that's one of the things we're waiting to see. I think President Biden learned a lesson from when he was vice president, and President Obama had to go out and push some bills through because of the recession. It's hard for us to remember that now because we're so focused on the pandemic. But there were also similar bills, not quite this big, but there were similar bills, and they didn't really sell it to the American people. So I think that before you see anything else, you're going to see President Biden, the vice president, other key members of the administration going around the country and trying to sell America on this so that there is support, so they understand what's coming, they understand what went into this. That is going to be their number one goal.
That's what he even said last night, that, he said that very specifically, that he is going to go around the country and with the vice president, with the first lady and the second gentleman to really explain this package and to listen.
Yeah, they really felt like that was something that did not happen during President Obama's term, and they've really learned that lesson. So we already know that President Biden is going to Pennsylvania next week. We know he and the vice president are both going to Georgia next week. We are starting to see that the first lady, second gentleman, they'll be going to other places as well. I expect cabinet officials will do the same thing. You could probably expect them to be on television talking about this. They really want people to understand what they don't want to happen is they've passed this massive, massive bill, and then people aren't supportive, or they don't understand what is in there and what all those benefits are. And as you can hear from callers, that there are so many very specific questions that need to be answered for individuals. You know, how does it impact every single person? And everybody has their own different circumstance. And so people want to know how it impacts them and what's to come.
Anita, thank you for joining us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Anita Kumar is White House correspondent and associate editor at Politico. Just ahead, we hear from a journalist who's covered the Me Too movement about her explanation and exploration into raising a boy. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.